A shield with the letters WB on a black screen. The shield and letter B disappear, and the central stroke of the letter W becomes red and turns into a letter I. Warner Independent Pictures, a Time Warner company. Against a background of golden, solidified amber resin, Warner Independent Pictures presents A Big Beach Production, a film by Liev Schreiber. Black specks, air bubbles, and scratches characterize the honeyed resin. A captive insect is locked in the amber. Elijah Wood in Everything is Illuminated. A creased old black and white photograph of a young boy in cloth flat cap, white coat, and a broad black tie. This and other old photographs are pinned to a map of the Ukraine. Three children in sailor suits, a handsome dark-haired man with a trim moustache, a uniformed soldier, a young couple, a solemn pose from three generations of a family, two young boys. Eugene Hutz, Boris Leskin, Larissa Lorett. Casting by A.V. Kaufman. Costumes designed by Michael Clancy. Music supervisor Susan Jacobs. Photos of Orthodox Jewish men with long bushy beards and black hats. Place names on the map appear in bold print. Vinnytsia, Sofiovka, Tomashpil.
I will be truthful and mention that before our rigid search, I had the opinion Jewish people were having shit between their brains. Primarily, this is because all I knew of Jewish people was that they paid father very much currency in order to make vacations from America to Ukraine.
Photos are pinned beside Odessa.
I was of the opinion that the past is past. And like all that is not now, it should remain buried along the side of our memories.
A young man writes these words in block capitals on a white sheet of paper.
But this was before the commencement of our very rigid search. Before I encountered the collector, Jonathan Safran Foer.
A sepia photograph of an attractive young couple. The young woman has long blonde hair. The man wears a cap and a scarf tucked into his waistcoat. The young man writes, Chapter 1, an overture to the commencement of a very rigid search. Jonathan Safran Foer, a prim, solemn-faced young man of about 20, with pale skin, handsome features, and striking blue eyes behind a pair of large, thick spectacles, stares at the tombstone of Safran Foer, 1921 to 1989. A gardener uses a leaf blower to blow leaves across the graveyard. A city. A train passes along a raised railway line in the distance, disappearing behind some trees and a tall neoclassical building. Jonathan travels in the back of a car, staring glumly ahead. Music by Paul Cantillon. Co-producer David Minkowski and Tom Karnowski. Edited by Craig McKay, ACE, and Andrew Marcus. Production designer Mark Geraghty. Director of Photography Matthew Libetique, ASC. The car drives along a street of tall clapboard houses with verandas, then past apartment blocks. Executive producer Matthew Stillman. Produced by Mark Turtletaub and Peter Saraf. Based on the novel by Jonathan Safran Foer. Written for the screen and directed by Liev Schreiber. Bright white sunlight breaks through the treetops. When it clears, an old woman lies dozing in bed. Her eyes flicker as she opens them. She takes a moment to focus, then begins to smile at Jonathan, who stands at her bedside, wearing a neat black suit and tie with a white shirt. A barely perceptible smile momentarily brushes Jonathan's lips before his features retreat to their habitual melancholy. He takes a seat. The old woman turns away to reach something, then turns back with a book which she carefully opens.
Your grandfather wanted you to have this for your collection.
She holds out a creased worn photograph to him and a chain with the Star of David medallion. Jonathan stands up and frowns as he steps forward to take them. He returns to his seat and holds the photograph up to study it. It's of the attractive young couple, the woman with the long blonde hair and the young man in the waistcoat. Jonathan turns the photo over and reads the inscription on the back. Augustine and me, Trachimbrod, 1940. Still smiling, the old lady turns away from him and gazes into the light.
Who is Augustine?
The old lady's smile fades and her expression becomes sad. She closes her eyes.
Grandma?
Grandma doesn't respond, but her chest rises and sinks as her breathing grows deeper. Jonathan stands up and steps across the small white room with its tall windows, where prisms of light fall onto the floor. He looks down at his grandmother sleeping, then kneels down by her bed. The old lady's set of false teeth sit in a glass of water on a bedside table, beside pill bottles, a syringe, and a nasal spray. Jonathan stares at the teeth, which appear to grin at him from the glass, then turns his head to look at the photo resting on the bed, beneath the chain with the Star of David medallion. His eyes follow the folds of undulating white sheet to his grandfather's serene face. A sheet is pulled over the elderly man's lifeless form, drifting over the pure, soft whiteness to a bedside table, where a large amber pendant sits by a pair of spectacles on their black leather case. Jonathan is now a young boy of about 5, precisely neat and clean in white shirt and black tie, and wearing huge round spectacles. The little boy stares blankly at his grandfather's possessions, then reaches out and picks up the amber pendant. He holds it up to the light to study a cricket within, the insect entrapped forever in the golden tomb. A dark-haired, slender woman picks up the child and carries him out of the room. As they leave, the boy looks over her shoulder to see his grandmother step up to the bed with her head bent reverentially. In a kitchen, little Jonathan climbs onto a chair, stands up, then steps up onto a cupboard. He reaches up and takes down a box, out of which he pulls a small, clear, plastic Ziploc bag. He pops the pendant in and seals the bag. The child walks slowly down a dark paneled corridor and pauses outside a white door. He turns a gold doorknob. The door opens and the grown-up Jonathan enters and stares ahead at a wall which is covered from floor to ceiling with labeled plastic bags holding various personal possessions. Jonathan holds up his latest acquisition, his grandmother's false teeth. He steps up to the wall and pins the bag to it. Above it hangs a framed photograph of his grandmother labeled Sabine, 3/25/1919. Jonathan's large eyes gaze intensely at the old woman. Another photograph is labeled Sam, 9/7/1952. There are Polaroid photos, a Star of David, a wishbone. Beside every individual relative's photograph, there are personal effects in bags. By Carol, 1956, a syringe, an audio cassette, and some dollar bills. By Marty, 1984, a dental brace and a sketch of a large-breasted woman. By Michael, 1976, a condom and an army medal. Everything is collected, bagged, dated, and pinned on the wall. Jonathan sits at a desk and gazes at the framed photograph of his grandfather, which hangs alone on a wall in front of him. The label beneath it reads, Saffron 4/5/5/1921, above a clear bag holding the amber pendant. Jonathan removes the bag from the wall, takes out the pendant, then studies the photo of the attractive young couple which his grandmother gave him. He picks up a magnifying glass and peers closely at the blonde woman. She's wearing the amber pendant on a chain around her neck. Jonathan raises his eyes to look at his grandfather, then examines the pendant once again. He turns his chair around and holds it up to the light. The cricket is perfectly preserved in the amber resin. The hand writes in block capitals, Chapter 2, The Commencement of a Very Rigid Search. A bearded bald man in dark glasses gazes severely across the dinner table at his youngest son, who wears a light-coloured hat. Two other men, one elderly, one in his 20s, who wears a black berry-type hat, also sit at the table. The boy looks up.
Where did you get that hat?
Alex gave it to me.
Take it off.
Почему?
Потому что я...
Because I told you so, that's why.
По-моему, клево.
I think he looks cool. Who asked you to speak? Did I ask you to speak? Did Mama ask you to speak? Did Grandfather ask you to speak?
Заткнись!
Shut up!
Don't talk to her like that!
Papa, у меня уже есть один сын.
Papa, I already have one son walking around Odessa looking like a raving lunatic. I don't need another.
Papa!
Father clouts him.
My legal name is Alexander Perchev. But all of my friends dub me Alex, because this is much more flaccid to utter. That is Father retrieving his fist from the right side of my face. Father is a first-rate puncher. This is my miniature brother, Igor. I'm tutoring him to be a man of this world. For an example, I exhibited him a Smutty magazine 3 days ago.
Why is it called 69?
I explained it to him that this is because it was invented in the year 1969. I know this because my friend Grisha knows a friend of the nephew of the inventor.
What did people do before 1969?
He is a genius, my miniature brother. He will be made a VIP if I have a thing to do with it. This is grandfather. Like my father and myself, he too is dubbed Alex. My grandmother Anna died 2 years before of a cancer in her brain. Precluding this, grandfather became very melancholy. And also, he says, blind. His most recent employment was Heritage Tours, a business he started in 1950s, mostly for aiding rich Jewish people to search for their dead families. It is a strange employment for grandfather, as there is nothing he hates more than rich Jewish people or their dead families. This is Sammy Davis Jr. Jr. She's grandfather's seeing eye bitch. Father purchased her for him not because he believes grandfather is blind, but because a seeing eye bitch is also a good thing for people who pine for the opposite of loneliness.
Sammy jumps out the fridge. Dog kennels.
In truth, father did not purchase her at all, but merrily retrieved her from the home for forgetful dogs. Because of this, she is not a real seeing eye bitch, and is also mentally deranged. Most of all, she relishes when I sing to her her most beloved song, Billie Jean by Michael Jackson.
Alex in a red and white tracksuit and red hat.
But now I must tell you more of myself. I am unequivocally tall. I do not know any women who are taller than me. The women who are taller than me are lesbians, for whom 1969 was a very momentous year. For me, America is a first-rate place. Most of all, I am beloved of American movies, muscular cars, and hip-hop music.
He enters a club with two young women.
I also dig Negroes. Most of all, Michael Jackson. He's a first-rate dancer, just like me.
A crowd surround Alex as he body pops, moonwalks, and breakdances on a lit-up dance floor.
Many girls want to be carnal with me because I'm such a premium dancer.
The sexy girl DJ and other pretty women in clubbing gear seem impressed as Alex breakdances skillfully, spinning on his head and windmilling his long legs about in the air. His red tracksuit and hat are set off by a pair of Adidas trainers and lots of gold jewelry. A girl in a glittery bra top dances as she watches Alex spin. Alex finishes with a flourish and the crowd lift him up. Alex showers them in cash, flinging the notes up into the air. Back at the dinner table, Alex recovers from his father's punch and rubs his jaw. Then, facing the table again, his father eyes him sternly.
You're taking a Jew to Lutsk this weekend.
Can't. I have plans.
What plans?
With Grisha at Club Zephyr.
Well, now you're taking a Jew to Lutsk.
But we have VIP passes.
Father turns to grandfather, who wears dark glasses.
Papa, I need you to drive them.
Go to hell, I'm not driving anyone.
Papa, they're paying $1,200 American.
I don't care. I'm retired. No more dead Jews.
Papa, you drive them to this place, show him everyone is dead, and you come home. It'll be so simple. He's looking for a woman who saved his grandfather from the Nazis. Trust me. There's no one there anymore. She's from some place called Trachimbrod. It's near Lutsk. They said he has a map. His name is Jonathan S. Four. He's a writer. He wants to write a book about the place.
Ладно, я поеду.
Okay, I'll go. But Sammy goes too.
Papa, please, you know that's impossible. She's demented.
Sammy leaps up the fridge.
You listen to me. I'm supposed to be retired. I'm not supposed to be dragging rich Jews all over the goddamn country. I'm blind. Blind, understand? My bitch is my eyes. I'm not going anywhere without her.
Papa, I'm not saying that I don't believe you're blind, but the American could have a problem with this.
No bitch, no driver.
We could make a uniform for her. To make her seem more official.
Alex's family stare at him. Alex and his grandfather are sitting at traffic lights in an old blue and white Trabant estate. Sammy's in the back wearing a white T-shirt with "Officious Seeing Eye Bitch" written on it. The lights change and Grandfather drives off wearing his dark glasses. They drive along a highway, past ships cruising into port, rows of cranes on the dockside, and a stretch of bleak, empty beach. Jonathan is travelling through lush countryside by train. He's dressed in his usual dark suit and tie and gazes intently out of the window through his black-rimmed specs. There's been a car accident in a field by the track. One car lies on its side with smoke coming from it, while two men sit on the bonnet of the other car, chatting amicably. A dark-haired, middle-aged woman is the only other passenger in the carriage. She sits opposite Jonathan and watches him take his grandfather's Star of David medallion out of a small plastic Ziploc bag and put it on, tucking it down inside his shirt. He slides the amber pendant and the photo of his grandfather and Augustine out of the bag and contemplates the photo for a few moments. Advertising hoardings near the rail track turn to display a different image, and a giant screen broadcasts information. In the car, Grandpa and Alex gaze out of the windows as they trundle through the city. Grandpa's wearing his thick dark glasses, but turns his head to stare at a McDonald's restaurant as they drive past it. Alex cranes out of the passenger window, watching a boy performing bicycle stunts near the Potemkin Monument, and they pass a marvellous palace with silver minarets. Sammy gazes out of the back window, and Alex, in blue and white tracksuit and cap, takes in the Potemkin steps as they cruise past. A lady in a headscarf and a gent with a walking cane sit on a bench together in front of a hedge. Behind the hedge, there's a busy skate park with skateboarders on ramps. Jonathan walks down the train corridor and goes into a spotless toilet cubicle. He stands in front of the mirror and wipes his brow, then notices a bottle of soap and a bottle of hand cream on a shelf under the mirror. He picks up one of the bottles, which has a blue lid and a blue logo on it, unscrews the lid and sniffs the contents, before capping it again and sealing the bottle into one of his Ziploc bags. Alex and his grandfather drive down a wide boulevard leading to a grand train station. Alex swaggers into the station building, passing a five-piece band to have set up on the station concourse. He checks out the arrivals board. Alex listens to the band for a moment, then heads out onto one of the platforms. An idea strikes him, and he stops, his gold tooth glinting as he gives a lopsided grin. He hurries back into the station building. Jonathan is standing at an open window in the corridor of the train as it pulls into the station. He looks slightly alarmed as he sees Alex running down the platform holding up a piece of paper. Hey! The paper has Jonathan's misspelt name on it. Alex points to it. Alex beckons to the five-piece band who are running along the platform behind him. And as the train stops and as Jonathan comes to the door, the drummer, violinist, accordion and brass players stand behind an excited Alex and serenade him. Jonathan stares blankly.
Are you John fan?
What?
John fan. Are you John fan?
It's Jonathan.
What?
My name. It's Jonathan.
Alex looks at his sign.
John fan.
Are you my translator?
Yes, I'm Alexander Perchev. I'll be your humble translator.
Jonathan comes reluctantly down the steps and shakes Alex's outstretched hand.
I implore you to forgive my speaking of English, Jonathan.
as I'm not so premium with it.
My name is Jonathan.
Alex has already picked up Jonathan's luggage and is heading off. Alex leads the way out of the station to the Trabant parked outside. Grandfather is dozed off in the front seat.
This is our driver. He's an expert at driving.
Is he all right?
What?
I mean, you know, is he healthy?
Of course. He's my grandfather.
Jonathan steps closer to the car.
Please, do not be distressed. This is only driver seeing eye, bitch. Okay, she's deranged, but so playful.
Wait, he's blind?
No, only he thinks this. Please, do not be distressed. Dear.
Grandfather?
Dear.
Grandfather, I've got Jonathan. We should go to Lutsk.
Grandfather wakes up and takes a look at Jonathan.
Da?
Yes?
Are you sure he's okay?
Dear.
It's about
grandfather! Yes, shut up, I'm blind, not deaf. I heard you the first time.
What did he say?
He says, okie dokie, we will go now.
Where will the dog be?
What do you mean?
I have a phobia. A fear.
Alex shakes his head.
I'm distressed by dogs.
Aha.
He's afraid of dogs.
Bullshit, no one's afraid of dogs.
Grandfather informs me this is not possible.
What?
Get in the car. The bitch and the Jew will share the back seat. It's big enough for both of them.
No, wait. You don't understand. I have a very serious problem with dogs. I can't sit in there.
Alex and his grandfather stare out of the car window at Jonathan. Later, Jonathan is travelling in the back of the car with Sammy. The black and white mongrel growls at the anxious Jonathan, who's sitting as far away as possible from the dog. They pass kids using the doorway to a burnt-out building as goalposts. They celebrate as one of them scores. The old-fashioned-looking Trabant has a blue and white triangle attached to the roof rack, with Heritage Tours printed on it in English and Russian. They drive past a huge brick cooling tower and through sunlit woods. Jonathan has fallen asleep, leaning against the window. He wakes up looking a little disorientated, and turning around, slowly encounters the beady stare of Sammy, who's lolling in the back. Alex turns round.
Were you able to manufacture this?
What?
Disease. Were you able to make this?
I don't understand.
Repose. Did you repose?
Oh, yeah, I reposed.
Good. Sammy Davis Jr. is also in repose.
The dog's asleep.
Why do you call her that?
What?
Sammy Davis Jr.
Because Sammy Davis Jr. was grandfather's most beloved singer. You know the Candyman? The Negro from the Rat Pack?
And a Jew.
What?
Yeah, he was a Jew. You didn't know that?
Grandfather, the Jew says that Sammy Davis Jr. is Jewish.
Daniel
the bitch. Not Junior. Junior, the singer.
That's bullshit.
Grandfather informs me that this is not possible.
Of course it is. He converted. He's the most famous black Jew in America.
Please tell me, is Deshaq also the Jew?
Who?
The Shaquille O'Neal, the Los Angeles Laker.
No.
And Michael Jackson?
No, definitely not a Jew.
Relieved, Alex turns away. The car trundles on down the long, straight, tree-lined road. The Heritage Tour sign is adorned with several gold Star of David symbols. The dog wearing its t-shirt is slumbering in the back, and at the wheel, Grandfather has removed his glasses. The car motors through the countryside, and Jonathan notices a lone billboard in a field, with an advert featuring a large, dark green cricket and a box of strange pellets. He gazes at it through his thick lenses, then pulls a leather notebook out of his rucksack and uncaps an ink pen. Alex is watching Jonathan with interest.
Father informs me you are writing a book about this trip. You're a writer?
No.
Then what is this?
It's a catalog.
Catalog.
I don't know why they told you that. I'm not a writer. I mean, I write, but more of a collector, really.
And what do you collect?
Things. Family things.
It is a good career, yes?
No, it's not a career. It's just something I do.
Why?
Well, I don't know. Why does anybody do anything? It's just something to do.
I understand.
Alex turns to face the road again.
I also enjoy riding, but I truly feel I was born to be an accountant.
Driving on the right, the blue and white Trabant turns off one main road onto another, heading for a small town. The houses in the distance have red tiled roofs. Back out in the countryside, the Trabant turns off onto a dirt road, leading directly through a seemingly endless wheat field that stretches to the horizon.
Are we close?
The Jew wants to know if we are close.
Tell him to shut the hell up.
Grandfather says we are very proximal. He says it will not be long until we get to the superway to Lutsk.
And from there?
To the Lutsk.
How long from here to Lutsk?
Perhaps you'd like me to stop the car and you two can fuck yourselves to Lutsk.
What did he say?
Grandfather says you should look out the window at the premium countryside.
The car rattles on down the dirt track. Night. The car pulls into a dirt drive and parks in front of a dark, looming hotel building. There are lines of washing slung across the yard. The hotel sign above the door suddenly illuminates. They sit in the empty dining room.
Are you hungry? Yes, I just hope they have something I can eat.
What do you mean?
I'm a vegetarian.
You're a what?
I don't eat meat.
How can you not eat meat?
I just don't.
To grandfather.
He says he does not eat meat.
What?
No meat.
No meat.
Steak?
No.
Chickens?
No.
And what about the sausage?
No, no, no sausage, no meat.
He says he does not eat any meat.
Not even sausage?
I know.
What is wrong with him?
What is wrong with you?
Nothing. I just don't eat meat.
A fierce-looking waitress with a huge bosom stomps in. Alex does the talking.
Здрасте.
Hello. Excuse me. Do you have anything without meat?
Зачем?
Why?
Our friend here is American.
I can see that.
Yes, of course, but he does not eat meat.
What is wrong with him?
What did she say?
She says they do not have anything without meat.
Don't they have potatoes or something?
Картошка.
Potatoes?
You only get potato with meat.
Potatoes come only with the meat.
But can I have a potato on a plate by itself?
Понимаете?
Please, this American is deranged. Would it be possible to have a potato without the meat?
The waitress looks at them sourly, then turns and stomps out of the room. The waitress returns with a single large boiled potato on a big white plate. She dumps it down in front of Jonathan and leaves. Jonathan stares at the potato, as do Alex and his grandfather, who each have a plate of meat in front of them. Alex and the old man look up at Jonathan in unison, then tuck into their food. Resigned to his meager repast, Jonathan reaches for some salt and knocks his potato onto the floor. They all stare at the potato, including Sammy, who sprawled out on the floor. Jonathan looks to Alex and the old man. Grandfather gets out of his chair, spears the potato with his fork, and puts it onto his own plate. He sits and cuts the potato into four equal parts, throwing one slice onto the floor for a disinterested Sammy, giving one to Alex, and holding one out to Jonathan, who puts down the salt cellar and takes it. Grandfather is the first to sample his own slice.
Добро пожаловать на Украину.
Welcome to Ukraine.
Jonathan stares owlishly at his slice of potato, then pulls a plastic Ziploc bag from his bum bag and seals the potato slice into it. The other two watch him intently. Jonathan catches the other two gawping at him. He lowers the plastic bag into his lap and gazes solemnly back at them. Grandfather's shoulders begin to shake with amusement. Alex, then Jonathan start to giggle, and soon all three are chortling away together. Sammy still hasn't touched her potato. Later, over glasses of black coffee, Jonathan shows Alex old photographs.
And these are your family?
Yeah.
Grandfather stirs his coffee.
My grandmother gave me this. That's my grandfather, Saffron. It was taken during the war.
Well, it's you.
I've heard that.
And this is Agustina?
Yeah. My mother said that he never would have made it to America if it weren't for her.
And she's from Trachtenbrod?
Or somewhere near there. This is Kolki, my grandmother's shtetl.
Shtetl?
Это местечко.
It's Yiddish, it means village. It doesn't seem to be far from Trachtenbrod. That's why I was thinking it might be called Sofievka now.
He points to the map.
Why do you make such a rigid search?
I guess I just wanted to see where my grandfather grew up. Where I would be now if he hadn't come to America.
You would be Ukrainian like me? Only not like me, because you'd be a farmer from some unimpressive town, and I am from Odessa.
I see.
And did your grandparents ever return to Ukraine?
God, no. My grandmother would go crazy if she knew I was here.
Why?
Well, she didn't think it was safe. She said that before the war, Ukraine was just as bad as Berlin. Jews weren't exactly popular in Ukraine. When the Nazis invaded, she actually thought it would be an improvement.
Who told you this?
My grandmother.
Why did she say this?
I don't know. It's just how she felt.
Dad?
Grandfather, he says Ukrainians were anti-Semitic before the war. Is it true?
His grandfather is staring at the photo of Saffron and Augustine.
Grandfather?
Alex shows Jonathan into a large, dreary room with just a single bed, a lamp, a chair and a bedside table in it. Jonathan takes it in.
It's nice. Really, it's just for sleeping.
He walks over to the bed and puts his rucksack and suitcase down on it.
Jonathan.
Yeah?
You were very proximal with your grandfather, yes?
Jonathan turns and looks at Alex.
Yeah. Why?
Tomorrow we will make a search. Good night.
Good night.
Alex goes out, then pokes his head back round the door.
Make sure to secure the door when I am gone. I do not want to make you a petrified person, but there are many dangerous people who want to take things from Americans and also kidnap them. Okay?
Okay.
Good night.
Sammy sits outside Jonathan's door. Alex calls to her.
Sammy Davis Jr. Jr.
She turns.
Давай ко мне.
Come on, let's go.
She ignores him.
За мной.
Sammy makes to follow him, then stops. Alex walks off down the hall whistling, but Sammy returns to her spot outside Jonathan's door, and still wearing the t-shirt, she settles down. Alex stands in the narrow gap between the single beds in the cramped room he's sharing with his grandfather, and gazes down at the old man in bed. He bends down and carefully pulls the covers up over his grandfather, then straightens up and looks down at him for a bit longer. Still fully clothed, with hat and gold jewelry intact, Alex walks over to the room's single light bulb and pulls a cord to switch it off. The room's in darkness.
He seems like a good person.
Yes, he does.
We should try to help him.
How?
We should try to find her.
Who?
Августина.
A glowing amber pendant with a cricket preserved in it. The hand writes in block capitals at the head of a clean page. Chapter 3, The Very Rigid Search. Morning, and outside Jonathan's curtainless window, a brown hen paces along the window ledge. Jonathan sleeps on his back. Sammy Davis Jr. Jr., who's curled up by his side, lies on his arm. In the cramped bedroom, grandfather's alarm clock goes off. Grandfather eases himself up and switches it off. Sun glints through the trees as the journey gets underway again. The blue and white Trabant is back on a long, straight stretch of empty road, with fields stretching for miles on either side. Jonathan is sitting in the back with Sammy. The sun shines down on the white roof of the little car as it chugs on its way. They pass a large block building with a flat roof. In front, a very rusty, danger radioactive hazard sign. They go off the road, driving across grass and passing an abandoned apartment block, its windows smashed. Alex and Jonathan gaze out of the car windows at the tall, tatty facade.
What is it?
Soviets.
What happened?
Independence.
They leave the apartment block behind and come back onto a wide stretch of tarmac without road markings. They turn sharp right. Alex points.
Madrid.
Look!
They approach a fairground with caravans, a flying chair ride, and children on swings. Grandfather pulls over near a group of men selling Russian dolls and religious icons and calls to three men sitting in deck chairs.
We're looking for Trechin Brod. Do you know it?
They consult.
You heard of Trechin Brod? Never heard of it.
Come here, please. Come here.
A burly man in a felt hat approaches grandfather.
It's a small village, Trechin Brod.
Mention the other names to him. Perhaps one will sound informal.
Kavel, Kavertsky, Sokarechi.
Maybe Kolki?
Yes.
Could you direct us to them?
Of course. They're not so far. Go north on the superway. Keep going north until you see wheat fields. Then head east through the farmland.
Thank you.
Vasiva!
Here. Thank you.
He offers cigarettes.
What is he doing?
What are you doing?
For helping us.
What?
Well, I read in my guidebook that you can't find Marlboro cigarettes here, so you should take them everywhere as tips.
He doesn't eat meat.
The man takes the cigarettes, and grandfather thanks him.
Спасибо.
The man in the felt hat watches them drive off and gazes mystified at his fresh packet of Marlboros.
What is tips?
Tips are something you give someone in exchange for help.
Aha. You're informed you will be paying for this trip with currency, yes?
No, not like that. Tips are for small things, like directions or the valet.
Valet?
You know, the guy who parks your car.
Why do you not park your own car?
The car motors down the highway. There are industrial chimneys on the horizon, belching out thick white smoke. Grandfather has dispensed with his dark glasses and gazes at the road ahead. Alex looks out of the window at a passing village. He's still wearing his tracksuit and cap. He addresses smartly suited Jonathan in the back seat.
How much currency would the first rate accountant receive in America?
I don't know. A lot, probably, if he or she is good.
She?
Or he?
Are there Negro accountants?
Yes, there are African American accountants, but you don't want to use that word.
And homosexual accountants?
There are homosexual everythings. There are homosexual garbage men.
Alex's eyes widen.
And how much currency would Negro homosexual accountant receive?
You really shouldn't use that word.
Which word?
The N-word. It's not the N-word, but...
Negro?
Yeah, that one.
But they take them all away. They're premium people.
It's that word, though. You're not supposed to use that word.
What is wrong with the Negroes?
Sammy sits attentively. They drive past a small herd of goats grazing in a field.
Are you carnal very often?
What?
With American girls, you make sex often?
Not really. Do you?
I inquired head most.
Do you?
Not really.
What do you intend by not really?
I'm not a priest, but I'm not John Holmes either.
I've heard of this John Holmes with a premium penis.
Yeah, that's the one.
In the Ukraine, everybody has a penis like that.
Well, what about the women?
You make a joke, no?
Yeah.
Sammy yawns. A little boy, a goat herder, carries a kid in his arms and calls to his herd.
Come, Sa'a, come!
The bare-chested boy, who's wearing baggy shorts and boots, steps into the dirt road as he sees the Trabant approaching. One of his front teeth is missing. Part of his herd congregate around a large iron cross on a small stone plinth to the right of the road. The boy stands with his hands on his hips, and the car stops in front of him. The boy comes to the driver's window.
Do you have any chewing gum?
Alex hands the boy a fat stick of chewing gum, and they watch him unwrap it, stuff the gum into his mouth, and pocket the silver foil.
Do you know where Trachimbrod is?
What's in Trachimbrod?
Nothing, it's just a place we're trying to find.
If there's nothing there, why are you trying to find it?
Why do you ask stupid questions?
The boy moves away and grandfather gazes at Alex. The boy walks round the back of the car. Alex watches through the wing mirror as the boy sticks something into the valve on one of the back tires. The boy bolts. Alex jumps out. Grandfather follows, and the two pursue the boy across a green meadow. Jonathan gets out and stares after them with a frown, then crouches down by the deflated tire and removes what looks like a piece of grit from the valve. He holds it in his palm. Meanwhile, Alex and Grandfather continue to chase the boy through the long grass where the goats are grazing. Jonathan stands and holds up the grit, then pulls out a Ziploc plastic bag, pops it in and seals it. Back on the road, the Trabant rattles along with an ill-fitting spare wheel, past a small bridal party congregated in a graveyard. Grandfather turns to a bored Alex.
Where are we?
I don't know.
Ask the Jew.
Alex turns round.
Where are we?
I'm not sure.
He doesn't know.
What do you mean he doesn't know? We're driving, how can he not know?
What do you mean you don't know?
Well, none of these roads have names. I thought one of you was supposed to be a trained and certified guide.
Grandfather is certified.
Please, you're making this impossible. Shut up. This is pointless. We don't know where we are. Shut up means shut up. Grandfather, we should stop. What are you doing?
Grandfather turns off the road.
Maybe we should stop and ask someone.
They drive over rough ground into a wood. Later, the car trundles down a gravel track and pulls up. Ahead, there's a couple of trucks and a car. A handful of men are busy digging a well. Grandfather stares ahead.
Go and ask them. Leave the Jew here.
Alex nods.
I'm not a moron, you know.
Alex and Grandfather look at him.
I know what that word means.
What word?
Jid. It's Russian for Jew, isn't it?
Grandfather watches him through the rearview mirror. Alex looks at his grandfather, then gets out of the car, leaving the door open behind him. Sammy Davis Jr. bounds out after him. Grandfather's eyes narrow and bore into Jonathan.
Wait! I'm coming too!
He jumps out of the car and runs up to Alex.
What are you doing?
I'm coming with you.
You should not do this.
Why not? I can help.
You cannot help. You cannot even speak. It is bad enough the time from Odessa.
I won't speak. I promise. I won't say a word.
Alex looks unsure, then walks on, hands in pockets, his hat at a jaunty angle. Jonathan marches after him, looking not unlike an undertaker in his black suit and tie and wearing a serious demeanour. The workmen look up curiously as they approach. A huge, old, thuggish-looking man deposits a heavy pipe down in front of them. Alex gives an unconvincing, casual smile.
Excuse me, could you tell me, do you know where Trechin' Broad is?
Never heard of it.
Thank you.
Hey, wait, what are you doing?
They do not know.
What about Sofievka? Did you ask them about Sofievka?
Alex reluctantly turns around and walks back over to the well diggers, Jonathan scurrying along behind him. The burly bald man looks distinctly unwelcoming. His grey-haired colleague who does the talking switches off the machine he's working with and faces Alex, who gives an embarrassed little bow before continuing.
Простите.
I'm sorry, I forgot. It's also called Sofievka.
What do you want? I told you, I never heard of it.
What's your problem, huh?
Maybe you've seen this woman?
What are you doing?
Alex snatches the photo.
We're trying to find the town of Trechin' Broad.
I told you, we don't know.
Do you want a Marlboro cigarette?
Get lost. Go back to Kiev.
I'm not from Kiev. I'm from Odessa.
Then go back to Odessa.
Alex walks away, leaving Sammy growling at the men.
What did they say?
Nothing. They said nothing.
Hey, Odessa!
Hey, Odessa! You forgot your dog.
Sammy Davis Jr., come near!
Sammy turns to Alex but doesn't move. Sammy comes running up to Alex, who gives her a whack.
Hey! Don't do that!
What the hell were you doing speaking English? I commanded you not to speak. You understand me, yes?
Yes.
Then why did you speak?
I don't know.
Now they all think that I'm stupid American tourist like you!
I'm sorry.
Why do you not listen? This is not your country!
Grandfather slaps Alex to the ground and hits him.
You little piece of shit! Don't you put your filthy hands on her! If you ever hit her again, I swear to God I'll cut your hands off! Do you understand, you piece of shit?
Grandfather stops and gazes down at Alex, who has his arms up protecting his head. The old man straightens up, his face creased with shame and sorrow. His chest heaves with emotion. Grandfather stands up and eyes the well diggers who are silently watching. He steps away from Alex, who remains curled up on his side on the ground, and walks stiffly away towards the car, as if the weight of the world were on his shoulders. Jonathan watches Alex get up and dust off his precious tracksuit bottoms before heading to the car. The Trabant is back on the road with its four occupants gazing out of the windows as the fields roll by. Alex faces away from his grandfather, squinting out of the passenger side window with his lips pursed. In the back, Sammy and Jonathan look out of their respective windows. Grandfather stares ahead as the long straight road unfurls, then catches sight of the pale half-moon in the blue sky above. He gazes up at it. There's another car behind them on the country road. Grandfather glimpses the pale moon reflected in his side mirror. He's gazing at it when he spots something in the green field they're passing. He stops the car and winds down his window. The others watch him get out of the car, walk a little way into the field, and then stare keenly at the object in the distance. It resembles a wartime gun emplacement amongst the tall grasses.
Dad!
Grandfather!
Dazed, the old man turns and gazes back at his grandson, Sammy, and Jonathan in the Trabant, then turns back and walks across the field. He walks until he comes to the top of a ridge and gazes down into the shallow valley beyond. Rusting wartime relics are scattered around the grass, including a broken cannon from a tank and an ancient anti-aircraft gun. Grandfather makes his way down a dirt track into the valley, passing an old tank trap covered in tangled wire. There's the remains of a stone dwelling up ahead. Grandfather gazes about him, then stands rooted to the spot with a glazed stare and a stricken expression. The feet of a man in dusty black shoes and wearing brown trousers stand on the baked earth. The shiny black boots of an army officer. The dirty bare feet of a man with dust-covered trousers standing on the stony ground. A man in tough black army boots on the dry grass. Another man, in black trousers and suede shoes, stands on the dusty ground. He wears a black coat with a gold Star of David stitched onto the top left-hand pocket. A soldier loads a cartridge into his rifle. The soldier aims directly at the gold Star of David patch on the man's black coat. The image of the star patch bleaches out.
Dad!
Alex and Jonathan stand on the ridge.
Dad!
Grandfather! What are you doing?
У нас бензин закончился.
We're out of gas.
Grandfather turns and stares up at Alex and Jonathan for a moment before turning away again. Dark clouds scud across the sky as night falls. Jonathan and Alex lie side by side on bedding near a flickering campfire. Grandfather is asleep on the other side of the campfire, wrapped up in blankets with Sammy. Jonathan is holding his journal. He and Alex gaze up at a myriad of stars.
Jonathan?
Yeah?
Do you think my grandfather is...
What?
Distressed.
What do you mean?
What do you mean, what do I mean? I do not mean anything.
Oh.
If I meant to say something else, I would say something else.
Alex rolls over away from Jonathan, who gazes up at the stars.
Something is not right. It's as if he's dreaming all of the time. Even when he's not in repose.
Jonathan, who's still wearing his suit and tie, sits up and gazes across the campfire at Grandfather and Sammy sleeping.
Why don't you ask him?
No. That is impossible.
Jonathan takes out the sepia photograph of his grandfather and Augustine, and gazes at it in the flickering firelight. The couple are standing in a sloping field of knee-high crops. The photograph comes alive, and the bright sky above the couple illuminates the lush green crops and the couple's pale, serious faces. Beautiful Augustine, with her long auburn hair and white lacy shawl, the amber pendant at her throat, and Saffron, who looks exactly like Jonathan, standing close beside her in his smart brown trousers, shirt and waistcoat, the outfit topped off by a peaked cap. The bright sky bleaches out, revealing an image of Jonathan standing in a grassy field, in daylight, staring at a distant river and the green woods beyond it. Now Jonathan stands on one bank of the river, in his dark suit and glasses, gazing across the fast-flowing waters, at a figure also in a dark suit on the far bank. The other figure resembles Jonathan. Jonathan gazes down at the rippling water. An image of a full moon appears through the dark water, and the river image fades to reveal the brightly shining moon in a starry sky. Jonathan gazes at the river by moonlight, as scores of Ziploc bags drift by on the fast-flowing current. A man's hand writes the next chapter heading in a notebook in bold black capital letters. Chapter 4, An Overture to Illumination. Morning. Grandfather is sitting on a petrol canister beside Jonathan, who's still asleep by the burnt-out campfire. Alex is asleep too. Grandfather has Sammy by his side, and both man and dog stare intently at Jonathan. Jonathan wakes under their intense gaze. He reaches for his glasses, puts them on, and sits up. He looks up at the old man, noticing the petrol canister he's sitting on, then looks at Sammy, who's peering solemnly at Jonathan from behind Grandfather's leg. Jonathan blinks.
You found gas?
Grandfather stands and picks up the petrol canister.
Alex, stay, stay,
para ya. Alex, get up. It's time to go.
Alex sits up with his cap all askew.
What the hell is it?
They watch Grandfather and Sammy head off.
He found gas.
The journey continues. Grandfather drives the Trabant down a road lined with lush green trees. In the distance, fertile fields and rolling mountains. Jonathan has the back window slid open, and Grandfather watches in the rearview mirror as Jonathan sticks his head out of the window to soak up the view. Jonathan watches the row of trees receding in their wake in the wing mirror, then settles back into his seat.
It's beautiful.
Tell him this is the most fertile land in Eastern Europe.
Grandfather wishes me to tell you that this is the most premium land for farming.
So green.
Before the war, this was the most beautiful place in the world.
Alex looks at his grandfather.
You were here before the war?
His grandfather turns back to the road ahead.
Tell him about Odessa. Tell him that the sand on the beaches is more soft than a woman's hair, and that Odessa is the perfect place to fall in love and start a family.
Alex shoots his grandfather a wandering look. The old man continues to stare at the road ahead. A circular mirror positioned at the roadside reflects the blue and white car as it glides past and on down the straight road. There are tall crops on frames growing in fields to the right of the car. They are now driving past fields of sunflowers. Jonathan has fallen asleep, leaning against the back window. Grandfather appears to be looking for something. He pulls over, stops the car, and points.
Там.
There. Ask there.
Иди спроси там.
Alex gazes at his grandfather, glances over his shoulder at Jonathan, who's still asleep, then gets out and walks into the field. Grandfather and Sammy watch Alex keenly as Jonathan sleeps. Alex stops and stares at a long red dirt path leading to a small house amidst the tall field of sunflowers. Then Alex sets off. The house in its yard is isolated in the midst of the yellow field, with other fields stretching for miles beyond it. Alex walks along the path carved through the head-high sunflowers, towards the house which has a red-tiled roof and a wooden porch. The rectangular front yard is filled with white sheets of linen which hang on washing lines that blow like flags in the breeze. Alex reaches the yard and walks between the washing lines to the porch steps. An old lady with fine silvery gold hair is sitting by a tin bath washing out a white sheet with an old-fashioned washboard. She doesn't look up as Alex approaches.
I'm sorry to bother you.
How could anything bother me on such a day?
Alex shades his eyes and gazes around the yard. The old lady looks up at him.
Where are you from?
Odessa.
I have never been to Odessa.
You should go there.
Обязательно надо побывать. А вы слыхали про местечко под названием?
Have you ever heard of a town called Trechenbrod?
The old lady stops scrubbing her sheet and fingers the white cotton.
I was told that I should ask here. Please, I don't want to trouble you, but have you heard of Trechenbrod?
Вы слыхали про Trechenbrod?
The old lady starts scrubbing her sheet again.
Простите за беспокойство.
I'm sorry I bothered you.
As Alex starts to walk away, the old lady looks up at him, her bright eyes cornflower blue. Alex stops and pulls Jonathan's photograph out of his pocket, contemplating it before walking back to the porch to show the old lady, who has lowered her eyes to her washboard again.
Have you ever seen anyone in this photograph?
She ignores him and concentrates on her washing.
Have you ever seen anyone in this photograph?
Alex is kneeling by the wash tub. He pushes the photograph forward, and finally the old lady looks up at it.
Have you ever seen anyone in this photograph?
She takes the photograph of Saffron and Augustine from him and gazes at it for a while before looking up at Alex.
I have been waiting so long.
We are searching for Trechenbrod.
You are here. I am it.
Written in a journal in bold black capital letters. Chapter 5, Illumination. Grandfather Jonathan and Alex are standing in the old lady's house, in front of a whole wall stacked high with labelled boxes, with more boxes piled on the floor. Some of the boxes are labelled weddings and other celebrations, silver, pinwheels, perfume, journals, sketchbooks, underwear, death of the firstborn, wooden toys, figurines, spectacles, menorah, dust.
Вы, наверное, голодные. Are you hungry?
The three men turn to face the old lady, who is slender and plainly dressed.
I can cook you something.
Please, don't make any effort.
It is nothing, but I must tell you, I don't have any meat.
Alex looks at Jonathan.
Thank you, but we're not hungry.
It has been so long since I have had any visitors.
Do you live alone here?
She shakes her head.
You have someone?
She gestures to the boxes.
I have all of them.
What did you say?
I'm not so sure.
What are they?
They are Trechenbrod.
She says they are Trechenbrod.
Jonathan looks questioningly at Alex and then at the old lady, who nods pleasantly at him and walks over to the wall full of slim archive boxes. On the way, she stops to take a good look at Grandfather. She selects a box labelled, In Case, and beckons to the men to gather round before setting it down on the kitchen table. She opens the box and takes out a small jar with a ring inside it. Alex and Jonathan share a look before moving over to the table. Grandfather edges forward more cautiously.
This is my sister's wedding ring.
It is a wedding ring.
She hid it in a jar and put it in the ground. I knew this because she told me. Many people did this. The ground by the river is still filled with precious things. Rings, money, pictures, Jewish things. I was only able to find a few of them.
She nods at the archive boxes.
But they fill the earth.
She's also a collector.
Does she remember my grandfather?
Do you remember his grandfather?
Who is his grandfather?
Alex hands her the photograph.
The man in the photo.
Saffron?
Yes?
The old lady steps closer to Jonathan and moves to take off his black-rimmed spectacles. Jonathan flinches slightly, and she hesitates, then lifts her brows questioningly before taking the glasses off and gazing into Jonathan's smooth, clean-shaven face.
Safran.
Looking a little flustered, Jonathan puts his glasses back on and gets something from his bum bag.
My family, they... In case I... My family wanted you to have this.
An envelope full of money.
For everything that you did.
She looks to Alex.
What is this?
Money, for what you have done for them.
What have I done for them?
Safran was his grandfather.
No, he means Augustine.
She moves over to another wall filled with archive boxes and selects a box. She opens it and shows Jonathan a sepia-tinted photograph of a woman and two pretty teenage girls.
That is Augustine, that is Mama, that is me. This is Safran, Augustine, and me. Mama was so fond of Safran. He was so polite. He would tell her she was pretty, when in truth she was not so pretty. I was older, so Mama thought he should marry me instead. But he was in love.
She says your grandfather was in love with Augustina.
They were married on her name day. When we were kids, my sister Safran and I played kissing games behind the trees. I can still remember how I felt. It was a little like flying. Tell him.
She remembers kissing your grandfather. She flew a little.
What's your name?
The old lady looks at grandfather for a moment, then pulls a photograph of a man in a suit from her box. The man has books under one arm. She walks over to grandfather and holds it up for him to see it.
This is Baruch, in front of the library. He used to sit there all day long. He took out more books than anyone in the shtetl, and he could not even read. He said he liked to think about the books, think about them without reading them. He would always walk around with a book under his arm. Nonsense, Mama would say. They said he was insane. We had this in common.
Grandfather stares at her.
Leave us.
Jonathan and Alex share a look.
Leave us alone.
Without a word, Alex and Jonathan leave the house. Behind them is a wall full of cuckoo clocks. They head out onto the porch. Alex leans against the wooden porch railing and contemplates the sunflowers. A white butterfly flits about the drowsy golden blooms. Alex takes off his tracksuit top, revealing a white sleeveless vest. Jonathan sits down behind him. Alex leans on the rail.
Jonathan, what you said at the hotel about Ukrainians before the war.
Yeah?
Do you think it's possible that my grandfather, he...
Alex pulls off his cap and wipes his hand across his face before putting his cap back on. Jonathan comes to stand beside him at the wooden railing. Jonathan looks at Alex, who is slumped morosely over the rail.
Your shirt's inside out.
What?
Your shirt, it's inside out.
What does it mean, inside out?
Nothing, it's just that the inside of your shirt is on the outside, and the outside is on... Forget it.
Jonathan, in his black suit and tie, walks down the porch steps into the dirt yard and goes over to the first row of sunflowers. He squats down and picks up a small green cricket. Alex watches him pull an empty glasses case out of his bum bag, pop the live cricket into it, and then pack the glasses case into a Ziploc bag and stow it neatly away in the bum bag he wears around his waist.
Thank you.
Leaning on the rail, Alex shrugs his shoulders, the gold chains dangling from his neck.
Why do you do this?
Maybe sometimes I'm afraid I'll forget.
Alex watches Jonathan stand up, take out a handkerchief and give his glasses a polish. He looks up at Alex on the porch.
Jonathan, I want you to know, my grandfather, he's a good person.
Jonathan slides his glasses back on. Alex turns as grandfather comes out of the house alone.
We're going.
We're
going to Trachimbrod, to the river. She's agreed to take us there.
The four of them and Sammy make their way to the car. The old lady, Lista, looks a little nervously at it. Grandfather looks at Lista.
What's the matter?
I have never been in one of those.
She's never been in a car before.
Well, tell her they're safe now. She shouldn't be scared.
Please, don't be scared. Cars are totally safe now. They even have airbags, crumple zones. Maybe not this one, but most.
Lister shakes her head. Sammy jumps onto the bonnet.
Sammy, sit. Please, you have nothing to fear.
I cannot.
Exasperated, Alex and Jonathan turn to look at each other, then at Lister. The old lady walks steadily up the incline of a rough path through a meadow. The Trabant follows close behind with the others. Sunlight washes the rolling green fields around them. Lister, tall and slender, carries on walking along a narrow road flanked by spindly trees, but with steps that are a little slower, a little more weary than before. The Trabant crawls along behind her with Sammy seated on its bonnet. Grandfather looks up at a faint half-moon in the sky. A full moon glows in a starry sky and traces a shimmering path across a river. The headlights of the Trabant draw closer as it drives through a grassy field beside the river. Lister stands with her back to it, then turns round as it approaches. Grandfather gets out. The others follow. They step towards Lister and look at her expectantly.
This is it.
What is this?
This is Trachimbrod. We are here.
Grandfather steps past her and walks on. He stops by a stone tablet set into the ground and surrounded by a circle of stones. Beneath an engraved Star of David, its inscription reads, "This monument stands in memory of the 1,024 Trachimbroders killed at the hands of German fascism on March the 18th, 1942. Alex, Jonathan and Lister join Grandfather outside the circle.
This is all that is left. They destroyed everything. Only a few were able to get out before they came.
You were lucky to survive.
Lister casts her eyes down.
They put us in lines, made lists. It was all very logical. They burned the synagogue. That was the first thing they did.
What is she saying?
They burned the synagogue.
Then they unrolled a Torah on the ground and told the men to spit on it.
They unrolled something on the ground and told them to spit on it.
My father would make us kiss any book that touched the ground. Cooking books, books for children, plays, even journals. And this was our Torah.
It was their Torah.
That had been in our synagogue since the first rabbi brought it here 300 years before. First was Yosef.
First man was Yosef.
He was a shoemaker.
They held a gun to his daughter's head and commanded him to spit. He spit.
Joseph spit.
They all spit and tore and kicked and whatever else they were told to do, except my father.
They all spit, except her father.
And then my sister.
Augustina.
She was pregnant.
She was pregnant.
They put the gun to her pregnant belly. They said they would kill the baby inside her if my father did not spit. He could not.
He would not spit. Her father would not spit.
He did not spit.
Lister closes her eyes tightly and bows her head in grief. Grandfather looks at Jonathan, whose brows are knitted in angst, as he stares at the dignified old woman. After some moments, Jonathan turns away from the others and walks across the field towards the river. He pauses for a moment to stare at the dark, eerie beauty of the rippling water and the silhouetted bushes and trees on its shore. He then walks on towards it. Jonathan stands on the gravel bank. Whispers of a ghostly mist drift along the water's surface. Jonathan bends down, unzips his black leather bum bag, takes out a couple of the plastic Ziploc bags and places them on the ground. He picks up one and takes a handful of the brown earth from the riverbank, puts it into the bag, then seals it. Jonathan stands up, holding two small bags of earth, and stares across the water. Lister, grandfather, and Alex are still standing reverentially outside the stone circle. Lister turns to glance at grandfather, who is watching her. Grandfather looks away, closes his eyes, and evokes his memories. The old man's worn and weathered features disappear into white light. Slowly, the handsome features of grandfather as a young man, Baruch, begin to appear. The image is washed out, almost black and white. His eyes are closed. He's unshaven and has a mustache and thinning hair. He opens his piercing eyes as the Nazi soldier loads a cartridge into the barrel of his gun. The soldier loads another cartridge. Baruch, in worn civilian clothes and wearing a Star of David on his jacket, faces a firing squad. A young boy holds a woman's hand and looks up gravely at her as she watches the execution from behind the row of soldiers. Baruch stands in line with five other men against the wall of a small building. His eye is caught by a figure in white, standing in a meadow some distance behind the firing squad. It's a young woman holding a basket. She lifts a white shawl away from her beautiful, serene face. It's Lister. The soldiers raise their rifles and take aim. One peers down his sights to view his target. Baruch gazes back steadily. The barrel of the gun engulfs him. Blackness. Then white light consumes everything. From the whiteness, long blades of grass blow on a hillside. Then a figure appears. Lister, picking away slowly down the hill with the basket hooked on her arm. The limp body of a bespectacled man lies in a heap. Corpses are piled together, like discarded toys lying where they fell. Rivulets of dried blood stain a man's feet and a hand. A man's bloodied face half covered with twigs, a tangle of bodies intertwined, lying in a ditch with white chrysanthemums scattered over them. Lister gazes over the bodies, then gracefully bends down and pulls a folded envelope from a dead man's pocket. She unfolds it. A single word is on the front. Mayemka. She places it in her basket, then steps around the corpses. She reaches down again and carefully removes a pair of spectacles from the man. The white powder covering the bodies falls from the lenses as she picks them up. Lister folds the spectacles and places them in her basket. An eye flickers and opens to see the faint outline of a half moon in the sky. A body moves, then a man rises from amongst the dead. It's Baruch. He's covered in the white powder and debris, and his face is streaked with blood. Dark, congealed blood blots his temple. He looks up at Lister, who regards him calmly. He blinks and leans back as he observes the beautiful young woman. After a few moments, he scrambles to his feet. Baruch turns and looks down at the heap of bodies. Another young man lies amongst them. His face is unmarked and his eyes are closed as though in a peaceful slumber. Baruch glances at the Star of David sewn onto his breast pocket, then quickly removes his jacket. Lister tilts her head. Her auburn silken hair hangs about her face as her blue, intelligent eyes observe Baruch curiously. Baruch tosses his jacket down. Baruch's eyes meet Lister's. He sighs, then turns and walks away. Lister watches him until he disappears. Baruch is old now, with white whiskers and deep furrows embedded in his brow. He raises his sad eyes.
I made one for you.
He turns round to see Jonathan standing behind him.
They're from the riverbank.
He holds out a bag of earth to Grandfather.
The broad.
Jonathan passes the bag into the old man's palm. Grandfather looks up, gentle eyes peering from a craggy face. He nods.
Trashim broth.
Jonathan smiles. Then, with a little concerned frown, he turns and walks back to the car. Grandfather looks deeply moved. Alex and Jonathan question Lister on the porch of her house.
And where was his grandfather?
Safran was gone before they came.
He was gone before they came.
Where?
He left for America to find a home for Augustine and the baby. 1 week before they came.
He went to America to find a place for them. And she was killed a week later.
Jonathan removes something from his bum bag.
Please tell her that there's something I want to give her.
Хочет вам что-то дать.
I think it was her sister's.
Говорит, что это ваша сестра.
Jonathan places the amber pendant with the cricket into Lister's palm.
Я знаю.
Yes, it was.
She looks up at Jonathan.
Подождите минуточку.
One moment, please.
Lister heads back inside. Grandfather steps up to join Jonathan and Alex. Lister reappears with a box, which she holds out to Jonathan.
Это вам.
For you.
I can't.
Говорит, не может это принять.
He says he cannot.
But he must. He is a collector.
She says you must take it. You're the collector.
Jonathan takes the box, which is labeled with the words, in case. Lister retrieves the jar containing her sister's wedding ring from her pocket.
I didn't understand why my sister hid her wedding ring in a jar and why she said to me, in case. In case what?
In case she was killed.
Yes, and then what? Why did she bury it?
I do not know.
Ask him.
She wants to know why Augustine buried her wedding ring when she thought she would be killed.
So there'd be proof that she existed.
На память о ней?
Нет.
To remember her?
No, I don't think so. In case. In case someone should come searching one day.
So they would have something to find.
No, it does not exist for you. You exist for it. You have come because it exists.
She says the ring is not here because of us. We are here because of the ring.
Through tear-filled eyes, Jonathan looks at Lister, who smiles brightly at him, then raises the lid of the box and places the glass jar inside. Jonathan is overwhelmed. He turns to Alex as though in protest.
Alex, tell her.
He looks again at Lister's gentle face and vibrant eyes.
Thank you.
Lister nods to him in acknowledgement. With tearful eyes, Jonathan swallows, then turns and steps down off the porch, followed by Alex. Lister calls down to Grandfather, who's standing at the foot of the porch. May I ask you a question?
Yes, of course.
Is the war over?
Grandfather climbs the steps until he's standing in front of her.
Yes. It is over.
Lister stares wide-eyed at him. Grandfather reaches out and takes her hand. To Lister's surprise, he holds her palm to his mouth and kisses it passionately. Lister's expression softens, and she smiles gently. Grandfather's eyes well with tears as he releases her hand, holds her gaze for several moments, then steps down off the porch and leads Alex and Jonathan to the car. Lister stands in the light of the porch watching them go. With her long hair hanging loose about her face, she resembles Augustine in the photo at Trachimbrod. Jonathan sits in the back of the car in the shadows. He stares down at the box and the little bag of earth that rests on his lap. He lifts his head and gazes thoughtfully out of the window into the darkness. Grandfather and Alex sit in the front, staring ahead reflectively. Alex turns to look at his grandfather. Grandfather turns to him. Their eyes lock. Grandfather reaches out and tenderly touches Alex's face. He strokes Alex's cheek, then turns to look ahead. Alex's brow is furrowed with anxiety as he continues to gaze at his grandfather. Grandfather's tired old features seem at peace. As he smiles to himself, white light washes over him. Grandfather sits in a bath, gazing upwards with a look of utter tranquility. His arms rest on the white curved sides as streams of blood trickle from his wrists into the water, which has turned the deepest red. The bath of crimson water sits on a black and white tiled floor surrounded by white clinical walls. A small pool of blood has gathered on the floor by the bath, beneath one resting hand. Alex, in vest and tracksuit bottoms, lies dozing on his side in the same cramped hotel bedroom as before, on a narrow bed close by a similar empty one. Light filters in from a window behind him. Alex turns and lies on his back for a few moments, then glances at the empty unmade bed opposite. He sits up and stares at it. Alex walks across a darkened landing, where the shadows of the window blinds are cast across the floor. He pauses and stares ahead tentatively at a closed door, then steps slowly towards it. He stops outside and leans towards it.
Dad.
Grandfather?
He opens the door to the bathroom, takes a step in, then stops and stares ahead. Alex has moved closer to his grandfather. He stands over him and gazes at the old man who lies with his head reclined against the back of the bath, waist deep in the bloody water. The Trabant travels along a rough track that stretches into the distance through cultivated fields. Alex drives. Jonathan is in the front passenger seat, and Sammy sits up in the back. All three stare straight ahead. The Trabant drives back along the narrow track, which cuts through acres and acres of wheat fields. Now on a quiet country road flanked by green grassy verges, the Trabant continues its return journey. From this road, the car joins the busier motorway and finally drives onto the forecourt, patterned with octagonal and circle shapes outside Odessa's impressive arched railway station. Alex parks in one of the circles. Alex and Jonathan remain seated in the stationary car, gloomily staring ahead. Their heads slowly turn a little towards each other, then they get out of the car. Jonathan carries the box Lister gave him. He looks across the Trabant at Alex.
Look, there's something I want you to have.
He rests the box on the bonnet, then removes the chain and Star of David medallion from around his neck. He holds it out to Alex.
It was my grandfather's.
Alex takes it and stares at it in his palm. He glances away and sighs, then looks up at Jonathan and nods. Jonathan nods. Then they walk to the back of the car and Alex opens it. Jonathan leans in, opens his small suitcase and puts the box inside. As he clicks it shut, Sammy, wearing her white t-shirt, jumps over the back seat and perches next to him. Jonathan strokes the dog's head and kisses her.
It was nice knowing you, Sammy.
He rubs her ear and nuzzles her head affectionately, then removes his case and small rucksack from the boot and steps back. Alex closes the boot. Jonathan and Alex exchange a sad, awkward gaze. Then Jonathan turns and, staring ahead solemnly, he begins to walk towards the train station. Alex stands watching him as they draw further and further apart. Jonathan stops in his tracks. The edges of his mouth begin to curl into a smile. He turns slowly to face Alex and exchanges a tender farewell smile with him. Jonathan turns and walks on.
I have reflected many times upon our rigid search. It has shown me that everything is illuminated in the light of the past. It is always along the side of us, on the inside, looking out. Like you say, inside out.
Jonathan sits alone in a train compartment, gazing out of a window as the train passes through green countryside.
Jonathan, in this way, I will always be along the side of your life. And you will always be along the side of mine.
Jonathan's in a plane.
Our families will be with us, and our families' families. Your grandfather, and perhaps, in some way, my grandfather as well.
Jonathan gazes out upon a gray-white fluffy carpet of cloud. Alex looks down at his grandfather in the bath.
It is possible I will never know why grandfather did this to himself.
Alex gently closes his grandfather's eyes.
Perhaps he wished to bury his life along the side of his past. But I must tell you, Jonathan, in this moment, he seemed as if for the first time in his life, contented to be where he was.
Grandfather's peaceful face is bathed in light. Alex writes in black block capitals.
Jonathan, I'm sending you this because we have shared something to exist for. And of course, in case anyone comes searching.
Alex places the last page of his manuscript down and picks up the completed work. Beneath it, there's the photograph of Saffron and Augustine at Trachimbrod. Alex turns the manuscript over. It's entitled, Everything is Illuminated, by Alexander Perchoff. Jonathan walks alone along an airport tunnel towards his arrival gate, A buxom ground hostess smiles at him. Jonathan stares at her. She's the surly hotel waitress in Odessa. Jonathan walks on, but turns back to glance at the ground hostess again. He carries on through the busy terminus. Ahead, he sees a woman holding the hand of a small boy who's dressed in knee-length shorts, a shirt, and a baseball hat. The child is the little goat-herd boy encountered on the road to Trachimbrod. He turns to look at Jonathan, who looks unsettled. Jonathan blinks and frowns, then walks on. He passes two security guards checking through some luggage. The grey-haired and mustachioed guard sitting in front of a computer monitor is the unwelcoming middle-aged workman Alex had encountered on their way to Trachimbrod. Jonathan pauses to stare at him. The security guard turns to look blankly at him. Jonathan walks on and proceeds down an escalator. Jonathan closes his eyes and is engulfed in white light. Jonathan stands at his grandfather's grave. Tiny yellow buttercups on long stalks sway gently in a light breeze. Jonathan reaches into the pocket of his black duffel coat and takes out the small Ziploc bag of earth from Trachimbrod. He opens the bag and empties the earth into his palm. Jonathan looks at it and smiles, then raises his eyes to look at his grandfather's tombstone, Saffron 4, 1921 to 1989. Alex holds out a handful of brown earth in his palm, then tosses it onto his grandfather's coffin, which lies in a newly dug grave in a green field. He stands with his father, mother, and younger brother, Igor. They're all dressed in black. Sammy sits amidst them. Grandfather's simple black marble headstone is inscribed with the Star of David, and beneath it, Alexander Baruch Perchov, 1920 to 2004, and at the bottom, an inscription in Hebrew. Alex, his brother, and father are all wearing black Jewish skull caps. Alex glances at his parents. His mother links his father's arm. They turn and walk back across the unspoiled, lush landscape. Alex puts his arm around Igor and they follow them. Past the Trachimbrod monument within the circle of stones, Sammy remains at the graveside. The dog turns to Alex, looks back at grandfather's tombstone, then gallops after Alex. Sammy races across the field and joins the others as they leave Trachimbrod. Alex and Igor run after her playfully. The screen fades to black. For Alex, 1906 to 1993. ITFC audio description by Aileen Downey and Lonnie Evans. Read by Aileen Downey. Cast in order of appearance. Alex, Eugene Hutz. Jonathan Saffron 4, Elijah Wood. Leafblower, Jonathan Saffron 4. Jonathan's grandmother, Yana Habritova. Jonathan's grandfather, Saffron, Stiepan Shamudovsky. Young Jonathan, Lyubomir Jezira. Alexander Perchov, father, Oleksandr Horoshko. Igor, Jill Kazimirov. Alex's mother, Zuzana Hotkova. Sammy Davis Jr., Jr., Mickey and Mouse. Grandfather, Boris Leskin. Breakdancer, Robert Hytil. Woman on train, Yaroslava Sokova. Ukrainian band, Sergei Rapchev, Yuri Lemchev, Pamela Racine, Oleksandr Hotz. Hotel waitress, Ludmila Kartuska. Old man at fair, Igor Lata. Fairgoers, Eugenin Mirandic, Orst Tkachik. Goatherder boy, Elias Bauer. Well diggers, Yurik Kokursh, Sergei Kapitan, Yaroslav Yurich-Kantz, Igor Savivsky, Jan Filipensky. Nazi officer, Bert Schneider. Augustine, Teresa Veselkova. Lister, Larissa Lorat. Young grandfather, Baruch, Lukasz Kral. Young Lister, Viera Shindelarova. Shakedown, performed by the Con Artists. Hit and Bricks, performed by the Con Artists. So Sensitive, performed by Pete Miser. Oblichki, performed by Gogol Bordello. The Star Spangled Banner, performed by Gogol Bordello. Amari Z. Amari, performed by Sokolom. Zveda Rock and Roller, performed by Leningrad. Hello Hello, performed by Arkady Sevami. Malenki Malchik, performed by Leningrad. Diki Mushina, performed by Leningrad. Sudnagina, performed by Kokani Orkestar. Fear of the South, performed by Tinha Trio. Start Wearing Purple, performed by Gogol Bordello. Soundtrack album on TVT Soundtracks. This motion picture, copyright 2005, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc. Screenplay, copyright 2005, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc. Original score, copyright 2005, Warner Barham Music, LLC. All material is protected by copyright laws of the United States and all countries throughout the world, all rights reserved. Country of first publication, United States of America. Warner Brothers is the author of this motion picture for purposes of copyright and other laws. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or copying of this film or any part thereof, including soundtrack, is an infringement of the relevant copyright and will subject the infringer to severe civil and criminal penalties. The story, all names, characters, and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings, and products is intended or should be inferred. Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company.